Our next guest on the program is the host of the In Play podcast and writes for a number of publications, including Fan Rag and Hardball Times. Evan Davis joins us this afternoon. Evan, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here, Rich.
So, look, I don't want to pin this on you, Evan, because clearly it's just bad circumstances. But the first time we had you scheduled on the show, I was out sick. Today I'm snowed in and can't get out of my house. Look, two times is okay, but if it happens a third time, if there's an earthquake or something like that, I'm going to begin to wonder.
Yeah, I mean, I think I might just not like you, Rich, and we've never even met in person.
I know. Usually it takes people at least one meeting to decide they don't like me. Well, let's talk a little baseball on this snowy afternoon. And recent transaction, I think, is a pretty interesting one for the New York Yankees, who I think got themselves a pretty good bargain in getting a home run hitter from the right side at a cheap price.
Yeah, of course, you're talking about Chris Carter. Listen, I think Brian Cashman is interested in giving this team a little bit of time until the overwhelming amount of youth that he has in his farm system is major league ready. That seems to be what's going on with the Carter deal. It's only a one-year deal. I think somewhere around $3 to $3.5 million. It's extremely cheap. And it seems like they just need him to fill the first base DH gap while Greg Bird gets ready. And also Bird hits from the left side, so that gives him time to, you know, get used to left-handed pitching. You know, Carter's a pretty one-dimensional player. He hits home runs and he strikes out a lot, and that's basically all that he does. But for that kind of money, and given the fact that they kind of need him to allow Bird to develop at the major league level, I think it's a really smart move by Cashman, especially since he knows that the Yankees aren't going to be a playoff contender for at least another year.
Evan, what does it say about where we are right now in Major League Baseball that the two home run champions of their respective leagues were among the last guys to get signed?
I actually recently wrote about this in FanRag, a piece called "Are Home Runs Underrated Now?" Because it is interesting. You know, Carter was on the market for a long, long time. And as you mentioned, Mark Trumbo, who is a Major League leader in home runs, he only recently re-signed, and he had to go back to the Orioles. Now, I think with Trumbo, part of that is just the qualifying offer system. But the reason the team doesn't want to risk giving up a first-round draft pick for a player like Trumbo is that I think they understand that home runs are kind of a dime a dozen in a weird way. 3.4% of all plate appearances ended in a home run last season. That's the highest in baseball history. And it's not like, you know, the 90s when you had like a few guys at the top hitting 50 or 55 home runs. It's tons of guys in the middle hitting 20 or 25 home runs. So you don't need to go to premium power hitters to get the home run production that I think a lot of teams are looking for. So for guys like Trumbo and Carter, if all their value is tied up in the long ball and they can't really do anything else, they can't really defend, they can't walk, they strike out a lot, they don't make a lot of contact, then their value tends to drop. And I think for those two guys, it's probably the market properly correcting. I think the one that surprises me is somebody like Edwin Encarnacion only getting 3 years and $60 million from Cleveland, because Encarnacion does everything. And he might have been one of the two or three best hitters on the free agent market. I thought he would have gotten 4 years and maybe $85 or $90 million because he does do so many things. That might have been teams being a little nervous about his age, but if there's any signal about the market overcorrecting and undervaluing home runs, I think you can point to Encarnacion's deal.
Well, and Evan, is it that thinking, too, that maybe led the Red Sox to say, we don't need to replace all of the offense that David Ortiz provided? They signed Mitch Moreland to give him a guy from the left side who has 20-plus home run power, and then they're hoping the rest of that offense can be made up by a bigger year from a youngster like Andrew Benintendi.
I think that's absolutely right. I think when you look at the Red Sox's strategy, they can be a little bit more diffuse and also not have to worry about paying a ton of money for a premium power bat, because they know they're going to get a lot of offense out of Benintendi. They know they're going to get a lot of offense out of Mookie Betts. Jackie Bradley Jr. appears to have turned his offensive profile around. I think they are hoping for a little bit of a bounce back from Hanley Ramirez, you know, platooning with Moreland. And, of course, Xander Bogaerts. We're entering a day and age in baseball where you can see offense coming from unexpected places, especially from middle infield positions. So many second basemen were big hitters last year. So many shortstops, especially young shortstops, are big hitters now. That, I think, has a lot to do with how players train. They train differently. They train more from younger ages. And I think teams are also really well aware of just how valuable a power-hitting shortstop can be or a power-hitting second baseman can be. So, yeah, I mean, there were so many power bats on the market that, yeah, that was probably going to depress everybody's value. But I think the Red Sox just didn't even want to concern themselves, especially because Dave Dombrowski's priorities seem to be in the trade market.
We're talking with Evan Davis here on that. And so, Evan, as you look around the league, let's start with the American League. Which team or teams improved themselves the most, at least so far in the offseason?
That's really interesting. If you look at projection systems, which, you know, everybody has their own opinion about their efficacy, but I think that they have a lot of value, if only because they strip out, you know, human bias. But the projection systems really love the Tampa Bay Rays for some reason, and I've tried to dig in and figure out why, and I think it has a lot to do with their starting pitching. They offloaded Logan Forsythe over to Los Angeles, who needed a second baseman, and they gave up Jose De Leon, whom is, I think, generally considered one of the better pitching prospects in the game right now. And certainly any 24-year-old right-hander who has a developed, really well-developed changeup is going to give you something. So their rotation seems pretty deep. I don't really know where they're going to get their hitting from, you know, given that Logan Morrison is their first baseman and Colby Rasmus is their left fielder. But we'll see how that pans out. I mean, I also think the Dodgers, on paper, their roster doesn't really look that different, but they had to fill three key positions, or really four key positions if you count second base. That was their closer, their third baseman, their second baseman, and somebody in the starting rotation. They just ended up re-signing Rich Hill, Kenley Jansen, and Justin Turner, who are probably the best options on the market across the league. And in Logan Forsythe, I think they wanted Brian Dozier from the Twins. They couldn't meet the Twins' asking price because Andrew Friedman tends to be a GM that likes to hold on to his top prospects. But Forsythe is a perfectly fine player. He projects, I think, to be slightly above average at second base. And so you just kind of look at that Dodgers team like, man, that is a powerhouse. And Clayton Kershaw should be healthy, and any team who has Clayton Kershaw on it is automatically should terrify everybody else in the league. So if I look at most improved team, especially one who really didn't have to change their 25-man roster, I pick the Dodgers.
Yeah, I looked at one. You mentioned the projections, and I saw one yesterday that had the Dodgers projected for 99 wins. That seems a little high to me, but they certainly took care of the needs, and that's every team's number one goal in the offseason.
Oh, without question. And by comparison, I think a lot of people just assume that the Cubs are going to rule the National League for the next several years because of just how much high-ceiling youth they have on their squad. But, 103-win teams tend to regress the next year, which is expected. You don't win 103 games without everybody kind of hitting their upper, their upper percentile projection. So you have to think that maybe Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Addison Russell might step back a little bit. And then the other concern is that, Ben Zobrist is a year older, John Lackey is a year older, and, Kyle Schwarber is going to be playing left field full time, and obviously he brings with him a ton of power in his bat. But, a lot of the plate appearances he's replacing are from guys like Javier Baez, Jorge Soler, Wellington Castillo, their young catcher whose name is completely escaping me, Wilson Contreras, of course.
Yes.
These guys were actually pretty good last year, too. So how much more is Schwarber going to give you? It's an open question. So I think, the Cubs have a lock on the NL Central. But, did they really kind of fill the needs that they had? Their bullpen still looks a little sketchy. Is Jake Arrieta going to play like a Cy Young Award winner again? I don't really know. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Dodgers-Cubs duo, pans out this year.
And was there a team that was mysteriously quiet and not as active as perhaps they should have been here in the offseason?
You know, I'm not really so sure. I think the Astros did what they had to do, and I think they and Cleveland and Boston are the clear AL favorites. I think Detroit may be kind of unsure about whether to stick or twist, just because, you know, they have one of the oldest rosters in the game. You know, they're gaining some payroll flexibility, but, you know, I think the Tigers are always in win now mode. So,
What about a team like the Blue Jays? I mean, they did get Batista back, but still lost a big one in Encarnacion, and didn't really address a lot of their pitching needs.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Blue Jays, you have Marcus Stroman. If you believe in how much Sanchez has changed as a pitcher relative to what he did last year, you might say that their rotation is going to be okay. But, yeah, I mean, I think the Blue Jays are another team that, like, their farm system is pretty barren. It's hard for them to hit the trade market if they want to stay in this kind of contention window. You know, Mark Shapiro, I think, is interested in scaling back payroll relative to what it used to be. So you might argue that. They're just kind of one of those teams that really don't have a lot of options available just based on their resources. You know, if you don't want to spend a ton of money, then, and you don't have the prospects to go and get big players, there's not a lot that you can do in the big picture.
Hey, Evan, I know you were watching because you were tweeting about it last night along with me. What was the best thing you saw in the Grammy Awards telecast last night?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, you know, you bow down to Queen Bee whenever you can, and her performance, you know, just demonstrates that she is basically less a musician and more an all-encompassing global force of performance arts. And I think we need more people like that in the world. So, you know, you always say that whenever Beyonce shows up, she's going to steal the show, no question.
Yeah, I don't know what I was watching, but I know it was incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, you're gonna have to do some deep dive research there, Rich, on all of her references. They are
absolutely
legion.
I'm just trying to get my nails to look like that. That's my goal.
There you go.
Absolutely. Hey, Evan, it's great talking baseball with you this afternoon. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Thanks, Rich. Go out and build a snow fort after this. Okay?
That sounds like a heck of a plan right there. That's Evan Davis talking baseball with us here on Downtown.